Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast, a podcast for people who want to learn more about their personal finances and get the most from their money. This series is hosted by Kate Campbell from How To Money and Owen Raskovich from Rask Finance.
The Australian Finance Podcast is provided for educational purposes only. The information is general in nature and does not take into account your needs, goals, or objectives. What that means is the information does not apply to you specifically. So consider getting the advice of a licensed and trusted professional before acting on the information. Hello, Kate, and welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast. We have a very special guest in today.
Yes, we do. We've got Bronwyn from Miss Moneybox.
Hi, guys.
Hello. It's wonderful to have you aboard. Our very first expert guest. How does it feel?
Well, it feels interesting to be called an expert, but I'll take it.
And this episode's actually inspired off one of Bronwyn's recent articles on her website about money lessons she's learned from Game of Thrones, which inspired me.
We're all big fans, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We are. So there may be a few spoilers here.
Yes, spoilers up to the end of season 7, but the recent season, you're fine. I won't be talking about those.
Keep that under wraps.
Wait, so what? Correct me. Is season 7 the last one?
No, season 8. Oh, okay. We've just had season 8. Keep up.
Okay. Well, I was hoping we could get into like the juicy details, but never mind. We'll save that for another another episode. Why don't you tell our listeners, Kate and I know a lot about what you do, but why don't you explain what Miss Moneybox is and where it came from?
Sure. So Miss Moneybox is a blog that I started about 3 years ago, and it's aimed at women, and it's all about simplifying finance just to make it more accessible, get rid of all the jargon so that people can read it, maybe even enjoy it, and hopefully learn something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know when I started How To Money a few years ago, this Miss Moneybox was one of the few financial sites I could find that actually simplified it. So it's sort of an inspiration.
Wow, that's so awesome. I'm so glad to hear that.
You have a website, missmoneybox.com.au,
people
can subscribe if they want to get the latest.
They sure can. Straight to their inbox. Yeah. missmoneybox.com.au/subscribe.
Cool. We'll provide a link in the show notes. So why don't we just get stuck into it? What we're talking about today is are money lessons that we've learnt from the big screen. So
and TV the small series screen.
And the small screen. Okay. Big and small screens. Money lessons we've learned, and we'll kick things off with Game of Thrones and your article, Bronwyn.
Yeah, okay, so I'm a big fan of Game of Thrones, so mm-hmm. I wrote this story as we were about to launch into season 8, which is now concluded. So the first money lesson that I would like to talk about from Game of Thrones is the famous line, "Winter is coming." Mm-hmm. So basically I took that as preparation is key. Couple of things that I think that you should prepare for when it comes to money is have an emergency fund.
Good one.
A lot of the thinking out there is it should be about 3 months worth of expenses, mm-hmm. but that's not always possible for people. So I would say whatever you can have, just something set aside just in case something happens, is not a bad thing to have. Mm-hmm. The other thing is insurance through your super. I know that you guys have talked about that in your insurance podcast.
That's a great one.
Yeah. and there is three types of insurance. There's the death cover, total and permanent disability, and income protection. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a cost-effective way of obtaining insurance for if things go wrong. Mm-hmm. And finally, the big winter that we're all heading for, the winter of retirement. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's where Jon Snow's gone. Oops, that was a spoiler. But that's something I feel like we should always be preparing for, even if you're young. It's one of my biggest passions is trying to get people to be more involved in their super when they're younger, when they have life ahead of them and the ability to take on more risk and mm-hmm. get the big rewards and ride out those stock market waves.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love the reference, winter is coming. Yeah, wonderful. And there'll be plenty of winters when it comes to, at least from my perspective, from like share markets.
Oh, yeah.
There'll be plenty of them.
But not all winters. Sometimes it's good times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's not scare ourselves off. But
I think it's summer at the moment.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. I was going to say, things are looking pretty green. Everything's pretty rosy at the moment. It won't always be that way. So
that's true.
Yeah, great.
Okay. Lesson number two.
Lesson number two, this is the famous quote from Cersei Lannister. Mm-hmm. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die.
Ooh.
I took that as understanding your tolerance for risk. So before you invest, you should really understand what your risk appetite is. So if or maybe you don't even invest because maybe you're too risk averse.
Mm-hmm.
When you play the stock market, yeah, you can make some big gains, but or you could also lose it all. So, I mean, mm-hmm. you're not going to die. It isn't literally a Game of Thrones.
Sure. Stock market goes down 5%, automatic death.
Yeah, so just be aware of your risk appetite.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one, really good.
Yeah, I guess you financially can die if you yeah, don't understand your tolerance.
That's
to risk.
True. Then you'd need your emergency fund.
Mm.
Mm. Good one.
The third one was changing allegiances can pay off. So Tyrion Lannister of the House Lannister
mm-hmm.
famously switched sides and followed the Mother of Dragons, Daenerys Targaryen. How I interpret that is that if you've done something the same your whole life, doesn't mean you have to continue to do that. So maybe you had a Dolomites account and you've ended up with a Commonwealth Bank account. Doesn't, you know, why are you still with that? If it's not the right thing, maybe it's not giving you a good interest rate. You know, switch, have a mm-hmm. look around, check out a comparison site. There's a whole bunch of different products that you can compare online and see if you can get a better deal.
Mm. We've put a few comparison sites and show notes in the past. I think we can do that again. Yeah.
I think financial services sector doesn't really reward loyalty. Just sticking with one branch, they often won't actually give you a better rate or a better deal.
Mm.
That's right.
And they'll just give it to new customers only.
Yeah.
And then you ask them, well, why can't I have that? And they'll say, oh, no, it's only new customers. Mm. They don't care that you've been with them for 15, 20 years.
It's really unfair. I think especially not that I have a mortgage, but if you have a mortgage, it could be worth talking to your bank and saying, look, I found this amount quoted to me somewhere else. I'm willing to switch unless you give me a better offer.
Even just having the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the next one? These are really good.
another Lannister one quote, a Lannister always pays his debts.
Ooh,
so
I like it.
In the world of finance, you guys would know there are good debts and there are bad debts. So bad debt would be, well, actually, let's talk about the good debts. So maybe a student loan where you have an interest-free amount, a mortgage, even though it is a lot of debt, it's probably a lower amount of debt.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got a credit card debt, that, my friends, is a bad debt. So there are certain levels of debt that you would probably want to pay off in the hierarchy of how much interest you're being charged.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
I think what some people do is they think that a good debt is automatically something that goes up in value, a house, for example.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily the case. For example, like a student loan.
Yeah.
It shouldn't go up. No. If it does, it's at inflation or thereabouts, which is pretty slow. But there are even like people take out debt on the assumption that, so for example, like shares or an investment property are going to go up, doesn't necessarily make it a good debt either.
That's true.
Yeah. And there's a, like you said, there's a wide spectrum. So things that aren't considered debt necessarily. So we've talked about Afterpay before.
Mm.
That's a name that's got brought up once or twice. I'd bucket that as a bad debt.
Right. Mm. And then you've got those nasty payday loans see advertised.
Those sharks.
Yeah, they're probably the worst.
They are the worst.
Yeah.
If you have one of those debts, that's the one to get rid of.
Yes, indeed. Okay, last one.
The last one is invest with your head. Sorry. Which one was it, head or heart? Invest with your head, not with your heart. So famously, the Red Wedding scene that happened in Game of Thrones was the result of Robb Stark falling in love with, I've forgotten her name.
The wrong one.
His heart. He followed his heart. Yep. And he was meant to marry one of Walder Frey's daughters. And he took revenge by taking Robb's head.
Oh.
So what I'm saying is that investor behavior is a big factor in determining returns.
Mm.
So,
and often negative, right?
Yes. So, you know, if you can crunch the numbers or, you know, read some great blogs or, you know, Miss Money Box, Money, the Rask website, or listen to podcasts to educate yourself. But don't just follow your heart just because you've fallen in love with a company or a house or something.
Doesn't owe you anything, right?
That's right. Yeah. So, and in the famous words of the Maester, Warren Buffett. Be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful.
Yeah, awesome. The Grand Maester. Yeah, so this is a – that quote is a great one, and it's actually prompted a heap of research and study into this thing called the behavior gap.
Right.
Which is effectively, you know, what people do. It's effectively buy high, sell low, repeat until broke, and you'll see the chart around. And it's so true. People, you know, when there's euphoria in the air, everyone's got a whiff and they're willing to – perhaps go outside their risk tolerance, and it almost always ends in disaster. Well, those are really good.
Yeah, yeah? Definitely.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I well, like
we'll include the link to the article so you can go and have a look at it in a bit further detail.
I thought it was really creative how you tied them all together, particularly the Grand Maester. I mean, everyone likes to hear about Warren Buffett.
It's true.
Yeah, wonderful. And it prompted Kate and I to come up with a few of our own.
I think definitely TV shows, you often have these subconscious lessons that you pick up about money, whether good lessons or bad lessons. I think sometimes from reality TV shows you can pick up some bad ideas about money.
For sure.
Bad mindsets and attitudes. And I think it's a good way to sort of talk about money because it's a bit less personal. And it's an easier way to bring up different topics with friends and family sometimes.
And there have been some really good finance shows that have come out probably the last 5 or 10 years that are really friendly, like in terms of like being for the broader population. Because in the past they were like they really had to dress them up. But now it's kind of like it's actually okay and it's acceptable to learn about it because it's kind of exciting and all the rest of it. So we've got a couple to add here. So I'll go.
Yeah, sure.
I've got four lessons and they come from very reputable sources, the Big Short and the Wolf of Wall Street, no less. So the first one comes from the Big Short and I reckon I tell someone this once a week at least, maybe even twice a week, and it's that there are no points for originality or there are no points for original ideas. And this is obviously from The Big Short where they were betting on the housing crisis in the US and around the time of the GFC. And it's kind of like the 2 years leading up to the GFC and when it all just unfolded. And so I've got a little note here and it says that pretty much everyone in The Big Short was shorting property because one person, who was Michael Burry, who was played by Christian Bale, found out about like this housing crisis that was just about to unfold and these CDOs and all these exotic derivatives that were written over property markets and about to come undone. But then what happened is all these other characters in the show, so we've got Mark Baum, who was played by Steve Carell, Jared Vinet, who was played by Ryan Gosling, and a couple of younger guys as well, they all got ridiculously rich from this one guy's idea. And if you think about it, they didn't actually do anything, you know.
You don't get bonus points for being first.
That's right. Yeah, if it's a good idea, you just go with it. And sometimes they just fall on your lap, and sometimes they're terrible, let's be honest. But sometimes the best ideas are the ones that you didn't come up with. And so that's, I think that's a really good thing. Like if we've talked about index funds and things like that. Just because everyone else is doing it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to do something different.
Yeah.
You need to find a stock that's completely different
to everyone else.
You can just accept that that's okay. Okay, so the second big lesson from The Big Short, as you can imagine, is that housing can go sharply backwards and it can happen very, very fast. So we obviously know what happened, or most listeners would know what happened around the time of the GFC, particularly down south in the US, a lot of houses just... like the prices just went from like $1 million to $200,000, and they were effectively, the banks were saying, if you can take on the loan, we'll give you the keys. And that was it. That was pretty much like the lending standards in the trough of the GFC. So, and the point I wanted to make here is that this went, property markets went backwards and suffered this great recession when everyone was most confident, and coming back to the behavior gap and the point about being fearful when others are greedy.
Yep.
It's shown through again. Okay, so two from The Wolf of Wall Street. The first one is the finance industry has the best work breakups. Anyone that's seen the show will know that there's some crazy parties that we have. No?
Oh, I haven't seen that movie.
God, you haven't?
No. I saw it a while ago.
Okay. Well, they have these massive parties, and obviously that's representative of the entire finance industry. Whenever I go to someone, I say, yeah, I do investing. They're always like, oh, like The Wolf of Wall Street. That's the joke anyway. And no, we don't actually. I think you said to me you had like a work breakup was like chicken and something else.
Chicken and champagne. That was our last day of work.
Okay, chicken and champagne. So yeah. It wasn't like...
No, we just like went to Woolies, got the few bags of hot chickens, got a few bottles of cheap champagne, and there's a few side salads, I think, and maybe some daiquiris.
But I only found out from you that that's kind of like a finance tradition, is it?
Well, apparently, that's what someone else told me, so...
Right.
Yeah, I was trying to find the origin of that, but then I think I...
Right. Well, my lesson was that maybe finance isn't everything that is made out to be on the TV.
Mm.
So... it's not all parties. We're not all, not everyone's trying to rip you off and all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's not not lab coats and trading screens. Yeah. Like the photos that you see in the news. The AFR just use the same trading photos for every article, I feel like.
Yeah, so that was the second point I was going to make. He's like, so we're not, it's not all crazy like that, and that's true, but at the same time there are many sharks and there's people that try and take from you. That's pretty much their business. They call themselves advisors, or they're trying to give you a hand up. But at the end of the day, they're just looking out for number one. And so it's really important to know where people's incentives lie. And we've talked about MoneySmart, the website by the government. And then there's the ASIC website where you can search for advisors.
Yeah, most financial professions, you can actually search them up in the various registers to see if they are qualified and registered with the appropriate government body. Mm. So... Mm. Just because they show you a name badge doesn't mean they're necessarily qualified to give you personal advice.
Mm. No, I'm not sure. Have you guys listened to Who the Hell is Hamish podcast?
Oh, it's on my list.
Okay.
Nope.
Okay, so this guy Hamish, obviously, I'm going to use the word allegedly, Ponzi scheme. So I think that was the general thing that I was picking up on. And one of the things that he did to make it seem legitimate was he took the letterheads of like the big name fund managers that we know and put fake statements on there and then sent it out to these clients. So it made it look like it was legitimate, like everything about it was legitimate. And he was really smart and all the rest of it. So you just don't know. Hmm. And at the end of the day, check that ASIC website because it could save you hundreds or millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. And I think, I don't know if I made this an unofficial podcast rule, but don't ever accept anything over the phone. Like, don't ever say yes to anything. Mm. Don't even, like, pick up the phone call.
Rattle out your tax number, your bank account details.
Never. And then there's another one, like, it's a simple one, and this is particularly for older people, is don't click on links in emails.
Mm.
Go direct to the source. My partner and I, we got an email from NAB, at least we thought it was from NAB, and it was almost like a carbon copy of the NAB web banker login page, and that was just last week.
Wow.
You know, really sophisticated. You know, they're just obviously phishing, but... just don't click on them.
Yeah. Yep. There are pretty sophisticated scams now, a lot more than the Nigerian prince that we had 5-10 years ago when it's obviously fake. But when it's something like the ATO, when you get those voicemails that was going around a lot last year.
Yeah, I got one of them.
And they sound quite threatening.
Mm.
And if you, in your mind, you go, oh, I haven't paid my tax yet, or I might be owing tax. And then you get that voicemail. Mm. So you think, oh, are the two linked together?
Mm.
Definitely. I think they... getting quite clever now.
Yeah, definitely. That, you know, the rules and the regs and the technology used to try and regulate it is more sophisticated, but by the same token, the scams themselves are getting more sophisticated. Cool. All right, well, those are my little ones. If you haven't seen those two movies, Wolf of Wall Street might be R-rated.
I would suspect it might be R-rated. I think
it's quite... Yeah, it's pretty out there. And The Big Short, that's definitely not R-rated.
Yeah. I think The Big Short's a movie you have to go back and watch.
Yes, yes.
Because I've watched it twice and you still don't understand everything going on. There's a lot of things you have to look up afterwards as well. I found that.
That's us as finance people, myself included. I found the second time I watched it, it was much better than the first time. Everything just kind of fell into place.
Yeah. Now, a show I've been enjoying at the moment on Stan is called The Bold Type, and it's about a few young women who are working at a magazine in New York, I think, which is quite fun. I don't think it's probably representative of reality, but you think watching the show, oh, that would be nice. Anyway, one important lesson I think I got from that was there's a episode where one of the main characters is negotiating her salary for her dream job, and I thought they did it really well because most shows don't actually ever mention negotiating your salary.
No, I've never seen that.
So they actually... she was transitioning to a different job, which is her dream job, but they said, you're going to have to take a pay cut because they don't have the budget. And so she came back with a proposal of why she should have I think she just wanted a bit more than what she currently was getting. And even after all the effort she went to with her proposal and everything, they still said no budget. But then she came back with some other points, so getting some extra leave for training, some extra budget for travel and things that came out of different areas. So she, Sutton was the character, and she was actually quite smart about it, and said, well, if I can't get a raise, then can I negotiate some non-monetary bonuses, inclusions in that contract? So she still got some benefits, even though that wasn't financial. And she did specify that in 6 months she wants a performance review and a salary review, so they can go over what she's done. So I think that was really interesting to see in a show, especially for young females, of negotiating your salary and your package and your pay rise and review. And I thought that was great that was included in there, because often your employer will have room to move. It may be, if it's not in salary, they'll have room to move in other areas of their budget. And even sometimes they'll tell you there's no pay rises or there's a pay freeze, but then you'll hear that some other person in the company got a pay rise. And it often comes to how hard you sell yourself. And I think it's also important going into a salary negotiation or annual review with sort of documentation, because your employer's busy. They won't remember what all those great things you've done during the year. So actually going in appropriately resourced, so saying, here's all the sales I made, or here's the great compliments I've had from clients, or this is whatever the stats are for your particular job, but actually going in prepared so you can actually give your employer the whole picture, and then they can remember everything. And sort of, I think it's almost like a pay review is almost like a sales pitch. So you're trying to show what you've done and why you deserve an extra raise and sort of asking for it.
I think that's so true. I wrote a blog post about this a long time ago, and women tend to not go and negotiate for a pay rise. But if you do, you should come prepared. And if you don't get the rise, like you said, be willing to say, okay, well, in 6 months I want another review. But yeah, women tend to not do it. They expect that their work will get recognised without them having to point it out. So,
and like, it might not be your employer intentionally, but they probably aren't watching you every day and seeing all those great things you're doing. So it's something you have to point out. And it's definitely scary, because I went into an annual review last year and I tried to document what I'd been doing. But it's definitely something you're like, oh, they are paying me what they're paying me. They're not going to offer you an extra $10,000 usually. So you actually have to ask for things.
Yeah, for sure.
And just ask, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes courage, but just ask.
Yeah.
You'd have a pretty good feel for your employer or your boss as well.
Yeah.
You know, some workplaces might be open and you can just ask, and just there's no harm, no foul, right? It's definitely worth asking. Yeah, I've been through this recently. I'm on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
In terms of hiring people, and for me, it's kind of like, just prove to me that you can do the job and you can add value, and as long as you can do that, then of course I'm willing to have the conversation. Because at the end of the day, someone who comes and joins your team, you're making an investment in them because they're going to return something to your business. It's just like any other thing that we do in our life. So if we do something for a reason to get something back or whatever, just prove to them that you're worth more than what you're getting, and the extra things that you've done are adding value to the business.
Yeah.
Just have that bigger picture, that broader awareness of what's going on. And I think you stand a pretty good chance, at least, you know, planting that seed in their mind at least.
Yeah.
And if you don't get it, my other advice would be to ask them what you can do better. Just get that feedback. And it's hard. Some people don't take feedback very well.
Yeah.
But try and take it on the chin and then think about how you can improve.
Yeah, yeah. Like saying to them, if they're not going to give you anything, that review, saying, well, can we schedule something in for 6 months' time?
Perfectly.
So. And if I demonstrate X, Y, Z, or if you have KPIs,
key performance indicator.
Yeah, I've got some, but I don't. If you've actually got them, say, well, if I can reach these in 6 months, can we discuss raising my salary by 5,000 or 10,000 or whatever it is for your particular field?
Yeah, good one. Okay, so finance, definitely, you know, exactly like it's represented on TV, fact or fiction?
Oh,
keeping up with the Kardashians.
Everyone lives like a Kardashian, don't they?
Yeah. And we're all we're all just trading penny stocks, and we're all trying to make, we all make millions of dollars because we work in finance. Is that right? I can tell you that's not right.
Take no, it away. It's absolutely not
otherwise,
right.
All three of us would be retired on a beach by now.
Yeah. Here's a good one. Kate, you put in the show notes some good shows that might be good to watch for finance. Can you guys think of any that might be worth watching that are finance related, I think?
I think there's some few interesting documentaries now on Netflix that are actually, I think one, Dirty Money.
Yeah, Dirty Money's really
that actually sort of more documentary side of things, but they actually look into various things that have happened, frauds and things in the past, scams and things. And so that might give you an idea so you can look out for these things yourself and stay away from the dodgy companies. So there's definitely some interesting ones now on Netflix, and what people will do for money and how it changes people's behavior. I mean, even the Fire Festival documentary.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
FYRE.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's very interesting. There's quite a few documentaries on Netflix, I think, show how money changes people's behavior and what people are willing to do for money.
So obviously there's a few classics in the investing side of things, which is like Wall Street, and there's Wolf of Wall Street, Big Short. And then one of the sponsors of the show, or at least were for a while, Billions, is one that's on Stan, which is about it's a bit fictitious, I guess, but it's about a hedge fund manager. So someone that... it's kind of like on the line between right and wrong, and with a lot of money at their disposal. It's a good one. Anything else? Any other shows? No?
Cool. No.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of the first expert guest insights episode.
That's me. I'm the expert.
No, great. Thanks, Bronwyn, for joining us. And
yeah, it was awesome to get you on for our very first guest episode.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I've had a great time.
Wonderful. Where can our listeners find out more about you again?
Just go to missmoneybox.com.au.
And you're on Twitter, right?
I am on Twitter, Miss Moneybox.
Okay, cool. That's easy to remember. We'll put it in the, we'll put it in the show notes in any case.
Thank you.
And Kate?
On Twitter and Instagram at HowToMoneyAUS and www.howtomoney.online.
Yep, cool. And you can find me on Twitter at Owen Rask and the Rask Finance website. And you can ask questions. So we've still got some great questions coming in
for our next Q&A episode later next month.
We're going to try and do them every fourth episode or thereabouts.
Yep.
Yep, cool. Yeah, so please keep shooting them in. We'll answer as many as we can. We'd love to hear from you. And until next time, ladies, thanks for joining me.
Thanks,
Alan. Thank you.
Thanks.